理课堂听 class.com。
College English Test, Band 4.
Model Test 3.
Part 3. Listening Comprehension.
Section A. Directions. In this section, you will hear 8 short conversations and 2 long conversations. At the end of each conversation, one or more questions will be asked about what was said. Both the conversation and the questions will be spoken only once. After each question, there will be a pause. During the pause, you must read the 4 choices marked A, B, C, and D, and decide which is the best answer. Then mark the corresponding letter on answer sheet 2 with a single line through the center. Now let's begin with the 8 short conversations.
Question 11. I hope you can understand why I've decided to leave this company. I do need to get a more challenging job.
But I have to remind you that we have spent a lot of time and money on your career here.
How did the woman feel about the man's decision? Question 12. No mail for me today? They must have forgotten about me. I hope everything is all right at home.
No news is good news. Remember, many things are slow these days.
What can we learn from the conversation? Question 13. This has been the worst flood for the past 20 years. It has caused much damage and destruction.
Look at the prices of fruits and vegetables. No wonder they're so expensive.
What are they talking about? Question 14. As usual, the lecture hall is in a complete mess this afternoon. Newspapers, soda cans, used tissues, all of them just thrown all over the floor. I can't understand how people can be so thoughtless.
Well, your professor should have the authority to get something done about it.
What does the woman suggest the man do?
Question 15. You've been doing weather reports for nearly 30 years. Has the weather got any worse in all these years?
Well, not necessarily worse, but we're seeing more swings.
What does the man say about the weather? Question 16. How was the job interview? I think you'll make a good journalist. I remember you as the best writer of the class.
Well, in fact, my application was turned down. They were looking for people with experience in the profession.
Why didn't the man get the job?
Question 17. Professor Kennedy has been very busy this semester. As far as I know, he works until midnight every day.
I wouldn't have troubled him so much if I had known he was so busy.
What do we learn from the conversation?
Question 18. Have you heard that John's been dismissed for cheating in exams?
There must be some mistake.
What does the man mean?
Now you'll hear the two long conversations. Conversation 1.
Do you think young people are given too much freedom nowadays, and that, as a result, they've lost respect for their parents and their elders generally?
I don't think so. My parents never interfered with my plans too much. They advised me, but never forced me to do anything I didn't want to do. I was allowed to take up the career I wanted. I think I respect and love them more for this.
Are you quite independent of them now?
Yes. As soon as I left school and started my studies as a nurse, I became independent financially. I have a government grant. It is enough for my daily life. But I still stay with them a lot, as you know.
You seem very close to your parents.
I am. Many young people today say they have nothing in common with their parents, but I'm rather lucky because I get on very well with mine. What about you?
Well, we value family life very much in my country. I'm very fond of my family, but I don't always get on very well with them. They try to control me too much.
But they allow you to come to study in England on your own.
Yes, but only after a lot of persuasion. Your parents treat you as an adult. My parents treat me as a child.
As I said, I'm lucky. Some English parents are like yours. They interfere too much, and they just refuse to understand our generation.
Questions 19 to 22 are based on the conversation you have just heard. Question 19. According to the woman, why does she respect her parents? Question 20. What happened when the woman began to study nursing? Question 21. What attitude did the man's parents have towards his study abroad? Question 22. What can we learn from the conversation?
Conversation 2.
Hello, Lily. Come on in. How have you been keeping recently?
Quite well, thanks. How's your project?
Great. I'm playing a consultancy role. I've only been here in China for a month, but already on a very good term with my colleagues in the Department of Computer Science. Well, sit down, please.
Dr. Francis, I've got a chance to go to Cambridge in August. I wonder if you could tell me something about Britain.
Certainly. Well, I was actually brought up in Scotland, but I'm sure I can give you some useful tips. Now, what do you want to know?
Things like weather. What's the temperature there?
The temperature in Cambridge is warmer than Scotland, around 25, because it's down south.
That's nice. Do you know it's 34 here? By the way, where do you think I should stay?
Well, you can, I suppose, stay in the college-owned flats, which are often near where you have your classes, or even on the campus. That would certainly be convenient.
Yes, it would.
But it can also be a disadvantage because you are, in a sense, separated from ordinary society. And I think learning from society is a valuable experience.
So, what's the alternative?
Maybe finding an English host family? I know of a student, Ali. He told me that he had learnt a lot by staying with a British family.
Thanks. It's quite a good idea.
Questions 23 to 25 are based on the conversation you have just heard. Question 23. What is Dr. Francis? Question 24. Where does Dr. Francis suggest Lily should stay in Cambridge? Question 25. What does the man mean when he mentions Ali?
Section B. Directions. In this section, you will hear three short passages. At the end of each passage, you will hear some questions. Both the passage and the questions will be spoken only once. After you hear a question, you must choose the best answer from the four choices marked A, B, C, and D. Then mark the corresponding letter on answer sheet 2 with a single line through the center.
Passage 1.
A true friendship carries a long history of experience that determines who we are and keeps us connected. It is a treasure we should protect. Unfortunately, the better friends you are, the more probably you'll have disagreements, and the result can be what you don't want. An end to the relationship. The good news is that most troubled friendships can be mended. First, don't let your pride get in your way. Most of us can forgive each other when differences are brought out in the open. Second, apologize when you're wrong, even if you've been wrong. Over the course of a friendship, even the best people make mistakes. Sometimes it may be best if the wrong person takes the lead and apologizes. When you apologize, give your friend a chance to admit that he has been wrong. Third, see things from your friend's point of view. And finally, accept that friendships change as our needs and lifestyle change. Making friends can sometimes seem easy. The hard part is keeping the connection strong during the natural ups and downs that have an effect on all relationships. My suggestion? Consider friendship an honor and a gift, and worth the effort to treasure and nurture.
Questions 26 to 28 are based on the passage you have just heard. Question 26. What would be the best title for the passage? Question 27. Under what circumstances can a friendship last long, according to the passage? Question 28. What should we do if we follow the author's second suggestion? Passage 2. In bringing up children, every parent watches eagerly the child's acquisition of each new skill. It is often tempting to hurry the child beyond his natural learning rate, but this can set up dangerous feelings of failure and states of worry in the child. This might happen at any stage. A baby might be forced to use a toilet too early. A young child might be encouraged to learn to read before he knows the meaning of the words he reads. On the other hand, though, if a child is left alone too much or without any learning opportunities, he loses his natural enthusiasm for life and his desire to find out new things for himself. Parents vary greatly in their degree of strictness towards their children. Some may be especially strict in money matters. Others are severe over times of coming home at night or punctuality for meals. In general, the controls imposed represent the needs of the parent and the values of the community as much as the child's own happiness. As regards the development of moral standards in the growing child, consistency is very important in parental teaching. To forbid a thing one day and excuse it the next is no foundation for morality. Also, parents should realize that example is better than rule. A sudden awareness of a marked difference between their parents' principles and their morals can be a dangerous disappointment.
Questions 29 to 31 are based on the passage you have just heard. Question 29. What does the author say about eagerly watching the child's acquisition of new skills? Question 30. What should parents do in the process of children's learning new skills? Question 31. What should parents do with regard to moral matters? Passage 3. More than 30,000 drivers and front seat passengers are killed or seriously injured each year. At a speed of only 30 miles per hour, it is the same as falling from a third floor window. Wearing a seatbelt saves lives. It reduces your chance of death or serious injury by more than half. Therefore, drivers or front seat passengers over 14 in most vehicles must wear a seatbelt. If you do not, you could be fined up to £50. It will not be up to the drivers to make sure you wear your belt, but it will be the driver's responsibility to make sure that children under 14 do not ride in the front unless they are wearing a seatbelt of some kind. However, you do not have to wear a seatbelt if you are reversing your vehicle, or you are making a local delivery or collection using a special vehicle, or if you have a valid medical certificate which excuses you from wearing it. Make sure these circumstances apply to you before you decide not to wear your seatbelt. Remember, you may be taken to court for not doing so, and you may be fined if you cannot prove to the court that you've been excused from wearing it.
Questions 32 to 35 are based on the passage you have just heard. Question 32. What is the advantage of wearing a seatbelt in a vehicle? Question 33. What is the driver responsible to do according to the passage? Question 34. Which people riding in the front do not have to wear a seatbelt? Question 35. What may be better to do for some people?
Section C. Directions. In this section, you will hear a passage three times. When the passage is read for the first time, you should listen carefully for its general idea. When the passage is read for the second time, you are required to fill in the blanks numbered from 36 to 43 with the exact words you have just heard. For blanks numbered from 44 to 46, you are required to fill in the missing information. For these blanks, you can either use the exact words you have just heard or write down the main points in your own words. Finally, when the passage is read for the third time, you should check what you have written. Now listen to the passage.
There were 23 British universities in 1960. After a period of expansion in the 1960s, there are now 48, including the Open University and the Independent University of Buckingham. There are 35 in England, 8 in Scotland, 2 in Northern Ireland, and 1 in Wales. They can be classified into three types. The ancient universities of Oxford and Cambridge were set up in the 12th century, but until the 19th century, they were the only English universities and offered no places for women. However, another four universities were founded in Scotland in the 15th and 16th century. The second group of universities were mainly created between 1850 and 1930. The third group consists of new universities founded after the Second World War and later in the 1960s. Many of them were set in the countryside. Some 340,000 full-time students attend British universities, and the government would like to increase this figure by some 25% in the 1990s. A very small number of students leave university without finishing their courses. The majority aim for a good degree to obtain a good job, or to continue in higher education by doing research. Most students tend to live on campus, while others may rent houses outside the university. Until recently, few British students chose universities near their parents' homes, and many seem to prefer those in the south of England. But financial costs are now changing these choices.
Now the passage will be read again.
There were 23 British universities in 1960. After a period of expansion in the 1960s, there are now 48, including the Open University and the Independent University of Buckingham. There are 35 in England, 8 in Scotland, 2 in Northern Ireland, and 1 in Wales. They can be classified into three types. The ancient universities of Oxford and Cambridge were set up in the 12th century, but until the 19th century, they were the only English universities and offered no places for women. However, another four universities were founded in Scotland in the 15th and 16th century. The second group of universities were mainly created between 1850 and 1930. The third group consists of new universities founded after the Second World War and later in the 1960s. Many of them were set in the countryside. Some 340,000 full-time students attend British universities, and the government would like to increase this figure by some 25% in the 1990s. A very small number of students leave university without finishing their courses. The majority aim for a good degree, to obtain a good job, or to continue in higher education by doing research. Most students tend to live on campus, while others may rent houses outside the university. Until recently, few British students chose universities near their parents' homes, and many seem to prefer those in the south of England. But financial costs are now changing these choices.
Now the passage will be read for the third time.
There were 23 British universities in 1960. After a period of expansion in the 1960s, there are now 48, including the Open University and the Independent University of Buckingham. There are 35 in England, 8 in Scotland, 2 in Northern Ireland, and 1 in Wales. They can be classified into 3 types. The ancient universities of Oxford and Cambridge were set up in the 12th century, but until the 19th century, they were the only English universities and offered no places for women. However, another 4 universities were founded in Scotland in the 15th and 16th century. The second group of universities were mainly created between 1850 and 1930. The third group consists of new universities founded after the Second World War and later in the 1960s. Many of them were set in the countryside. Some 340,000 full-time students attend British universities, and the government would like to increase this figure by some 25% in the 1990s. A very small number of students leave university without finishing their courses. The majority aim for a good degree to obtain a good job, or to continue in higher education by doing research. Most students tend to live on campus, while others may rent houses outside the university. Until recently, few British students chose universities near their parents' homes, and many seem to prefer those in the south of England. But financial costs are now changing these choices.